Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm Chuck.
And it's been an interesting week for you post-surgery, man. How are you feeling? We talked a little bit about it on Locker Room when you were...
Yes.
You were well into your pain medication.
I still might be.
Yeah.
Who knows? No, I took a pain pill like 3 hours ago, and I just took a light one like 30 minutes ago because the pain from the car ride, being stuck in the back of a car with a swollen up leg, has just been horrible. So yeah, no, it's been pretty interesting after surgery. Ended up having like two three inch screws screwed into my shin when they relocated to my knee and fixed the split cartilage gap that I had inside of the kneecap where the cartilage is. Yeah.
So, and all this because somebody didn't want to go to jail.
Right. All because some assault with a deadly weapon suspect decided to smack some buddy in the head with a fucking pipe or some shit and take off running, you know, and then didn't want to comply. And
yep,
man. And then I'm the one who gets months and months and months of pain and shit. Yeah, what a dick. Yeah. What guy is such a dick?
Well, here we are this week with our guest, Stebble. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me here.
No, we appreciate you coming on. And now you have your own channel. I thought we'd just start with that. You're a deputy sheriff. And I don't know if you want to be generic or vague or specific about where you work, but it's in the United States. You're a deputy sheriff.
Yes, I work for Douglas County Sheriff's Office in Nevada, so around Lake Tahoe.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, I do have my own channel. However, it's in Polish, so not very many of your viewers will be able to understand what I'm saying over there.
Oh. Yeah, but they get to watch you shoot, and that's the universal language.
That's true.
So, true. Yeah, no, I reached out to you, and then Chuck got you on the show because I thought it would be, I'd seen your YouTube channel, and you know, obviously we'd had a connection outside of the podcast, and so it's good to have you on. We appreciate you coming on. And just if anybody wants to check out your channel, we'll have you give it out at the beginning and at the end. But what is it?
It's Sheriff USA on YouTube, obviously, but it's right. Spelled a little different. It's spelled in Polish, so it's the pronunciation.
Sheriff.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. which means sheriff in Polish.
Exactly. So, and as people can hear, you have an accent. So you are actually from Poland originally.
Yes. I was born and raised over there. I came to States in 2002 when I was 23 years old. I think this accent will stay with me forever. You know, I
can't. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, how long has Arnold Schwarzenegger been here? And he probably actually works with a coach to keep his accent because it's his trademark.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, he goes to an Austrian dialect coach to get the. you
know. That is true.
So, what is your now? You're deputy sheriff. You've come from Poland. A little bit about your channel, real quick. What's the purpose of your channel? Being that you're an American deputy sheriff, but it's in Polish.
So the idea was, I was a firefighter first. So I became a firefighter.
We won't hold
here.
That against you.
I was most people don't on this side of the line, I would say.
Right.
Anyway, so I became a volunteer firefighter. I was a firefighter for a couple of years, 4 or 5, whatever. And I got in connection with some firefighters in Poland, and they had completely different system over there. So they asked me to write a couple articles about firefighting in the United States, about differences, about how we do it here. So I did, and that kind of sparked my Facebook page, which was about firefighting in the United States. And then when I became a deputy sheriff, that kind of transitioned into telling people in Poland and in Europe how the law enforcement works in here. Because there's very many misconceptions, you know. They think that cops look like Dirty Harry, and you know, they have the ideas from... No, seriously, I mean, I have on my channel are very related to movies from here, you know. Sure. And they based off of movies from 80s and 90s. So
do you just get to shoot people in the street?
Yeah,
all the
that's
time?
Exactly what it is. Yeah, you do whatever you want, and you go. Yeah. So I'm trying to just show people how different it is here, and what different tools we have, and how the law enforcement is constantly changing due to everything. You know,
literally like everything. Someone farts, and then the new law has changed.
That's exactly what it is. You know, and
it offended someone.
Yeah, yep, that's exactly what it is. So I'm trying to show, you know, different face of law enforcement for people in Poland. I'm trying to answer their questions, and basically that's what the channel is about. And I venture a little bit into my private life and showing them the United States of Wild West. That's what I call it, you know, because it's
right.
America is a little different in rural Nevada than it is in LA or big cities or whatever. And
big
I like
and
it that way better than the big cities.
Yeah,
so
I've got
that kind.
Of I've got a close friend who lives in Reno, and I visited there a lot. And there is very much a different sensibility, you know, Carson City and Virginia City and all these areas. And it's definitely a different sensibility than you would get anywhere in Southern California or San Francisco or something like that.
Put it this way, in Nevada, on the Strip in Vegas, if you spit on the ground in front of a cop, technically that cop can arrest you and hold you until your arraignment date. That's
really?
How crazy. Yes. My buddy. Went
Stevel, are you serious? You can do that too. Or is that just in Vegas?
Bro.
Vegas is a little different, but absolutely. Sure. Yeah. It is.
Dude. Wow. It's awesome. You told
That'd
me that.
Be
like,
fantastic.
He's like urinating. Anything.
The problem is people, you know, I work in Tahoe a lot, which is, you know, part of Nevada where we still have casinos, obviously. And it's close to, you know, Sacramento, Bay Area. So that's where all the, let's say, casino customers are coming from. And they think it's like there, you know, they can do whatever they want and they go wild. And then they come to Nevada and they have, you know, little different experience because us cops here are a little different than cops in San Francisco or cops in LA. Yeah. And we have a little different laws and we have a little different, let's call it, approach to policing, you know.
We have laws?
Yeah, exactly, you know. So, you know.
No, I think they have a different approach to law.
I only have a couple grams of cocaine. That's a ticket in California, you know.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not. No, you're going with me today.
They don't even get arrested.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's a misdemeanor.
So that creates a little bit of problems for us too, you know, because we have to kind of educate those people before we enforce everything because they feel like it's a little different, you know. So
I'm over challenge. I'm just on the Nevada side of Tahoe. It's California's right there. Well, you should have kept your cocaine in California.
Exactly.
It's medicinal. I got a doctor's note.
It is crazy. I mean, we used to joke around about how, you know, I can't have a switchblade, and you know, just driving across the border from California to Nevada changes whether or not you're committing a crime. Just driving 10 feet across an imaginary line just changes,
you know,
that whole thing.
Most of my guns are illegal in California.
Right.
And I have just regular guns.
Most guns are illegal in California.
Yeah, that's true. You know, when you think about stuff like that, you know, people don't realize, you know, oh, I have, you know, whatever, Glock 17, which is, I mean, it's just a regular gun. It's nothing special. Yeah, but if it's more than 10 rounds, it's illegal in California. Mm-hmm. And there's many other, you know, little things that you have to think about when you get a gun, when you conceal carry into California, even as a cop. Yep. You know, you have to.
Yeah.
It's just crazy over there.
That's for sure. It is crazy over there, and I'm glad. I'm sorry Chuck is there, but I'm glad to be out.
Dude, I want to leave so bad. Yeah. If I can leave, I'm gonna leave, but I still got like probably 2 years that I have to stay here because of like my knee. But
yeah,
after that, I'm gone. Yeah, right. So,
from my perspective, you know, I as a kid, I grew up in communist country. You know, Poland was under under Russian regime, and I've seen socialism and communism firsthand. You know, and and the way the and I'm sorry to say this, but I see this all over the United States right now. And it's sad that people are willing to vote socialism and communism in, and they don't realize that the only way to out of communism and socialism is civil war.
Yeah.
There's no, you know what I mean? I've
you can vote yourself into socialism, but the only way out's at the end of a gun barrel.
Yeah. So it's horrible. No, I remember, you know, I mean, communists fell in Poland when I was 10 years old. So I was still a kid and I didn't remember, understand much back then. But I see, I remember, you know, my memories, when I compare them to what's going on right now, it's horrible. You know, I remember, I'll give you an example, a store size of Raley's or you know, any other grocery store here in the States. In Poland, we had stores like that back then, but they were open for business. There was, you know, cashier in every line. There were cleaning crew, there was store manager and everything else. And the store was completely empty. There was nothing in there, you know, and it's like, I've seen bits of pieces of that already. You know, this last year people were, you know, hunting for toilet paper, but it kind of reminded me, it was the same. You know, I remember in Poland, there was news in the newspapers when there was toilet paper available in a store.
Yeah.
And that's where this is going. You know, now they're saying, oh, you know, maybe this Christmas, there will be no stuff for kids in stores because there's some problems with shipping. I've seen it all.
You know? Mm-hmm.
I remember those days, and I can't imagine that people are willingly voting that stuff in. That's something that blows my mind.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling to me too. But I think it's a generational thing because our generation we had it heavily, you know, beaten into us that, you know, socialism and communism, they'd seen it only, you know, the Russian Revolution was for people who don't know history. Russian Revolution, we're talking like between World War I and World War II, right? Mm-hmm. That's when Russia became a Soviet, you know, communist country. Yeah, and so you're talking about by the end of World War II, beginning of the Korean War, you know, that's only 20 years later. And then by the time that's when my parents were born, they'd seen it firsthand. My grandmother fled, you know, the civil war in Russia to go to Canada. So we were raised that this leads nowhere good. Mm-hmm. And then somehow, somewhere in the 60s, this like, you know, mentality crept into academia where it was saying, no, it's more enlightened to take care of people. And to take care of people, you need the government to do it for you. The government has to take care of people. Regular people shouldn't be doing that. Like, okay, hold on, time out. I know where this is going.
Yeah.
The problem here, I think, is also that a lot of people do not realize how good they have it in here.
Oh, God,
you know, and then if you talk to veterans, to people that have been outside the United States, somewhere other place than Cancun and Hawaii, you know, Hawaii States, but Cancun and, let's say, I don't know, some other warm country.
Oh, another third world country that's warm, yeah.
You know, but when you go to a real third world country when they have no any kind of tourism or any kind of good economics, you'll see what it is, how hard people have it, you know. And
go to Haiti.
You're sitting in Starbucks typing on your MacBook that it's so hard in here in the United States and it's so injustice, you are completely wrong.
You know? Go to the Sudan.
Right. And those are the people that have the audacity to bitch while they're sitting inside of a nice warm store where they, you know, they took some money and bought whatever they wanted.
Exactly. Yeah.
They don't understand that communism and socialism, you wouldn't be able to go and buy whatever fucking bread you want.
Yeah. You can't even decide what you want to do for like a living.
Yeah. You would get some stale, you know, 5-day-old, 10-day-old, weekday-old bread. And then that would be your bread for the month, you know, like they don't understand that. And I think a lot of it has to do with schools, the school systems. I didn't go to a school. So we had our own school system in the rural area that we lived. So our people who taught us were really heavy on academics and, mainly history. And we learned a lot. Now, I look at other people.
Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it.
Exactly. Yeah. They went to major unified school districts, right? And I asked them about what they taught in history. And they're like, oh, I don't remember history. I'm like, do you remember anything that happened in this time period? No. I'm like, right. Do you remember being taught it? They're like, no.
They don't teach mm-hmm. history. What they teach is everything you learn and celebrate is bad and wrong. And here's the reasons why everybody's been lying to you about, the history of your country for the last, 100 years. That's what they're teaching. They're not teaching actual, factual, this is what happened history. Because this is what happened history would be, hey, Christopher Columbus came over here and he brought a bunch of kind of colonialism and some practices that weren't really cool. And we did some fucked up shit, but he was also exploring and he didn't know any better. And also when he got here, the Indians that were here or the indigenous people that are here were fucking doing baby sacrifices and cutting people's hearts out. And so they looked at him as savage cave people because they couldn't figure out how human beings, had on one side of the world had been able to get in a boat and cross an ocean. And yet here they are, when they get to the land on the other side, they're like, oh my gosh, these people are cavemen. They're primitives. They're savages. Well, right. That's what they look like to them. They were like, well, where are your boats? What are boats?
But now it's too harsh to teach any of that because it's not politically correct or whatever the fuck they're spinning.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, no
exactly,
shit.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
Well, we're glad to have you on. And I wanted to find out, more about you and how you ended up getting into law enforcement. But you told us you kind of came over here and started out as a volunteer firefighter and ended up being a deputy sheriff. So the floor is yours, my friend. Tell us whatever story you have.
I don't know. I have a couple of stories. So I'm going to touch back to that, how I became a cop. So sure. My idea of being a firefighter and later on being a cop comes from my gratitude to people here in the United States. I came here, I was 23 years old, I had nothing to my name except one suitcase, came here as an exchange student. And after many, many visa changes and other legal battles, I was able to stay. But along the way, people were always super friendly to me, helpful. They were willing to open their houses to me and other stuff. I really didn't experience anything bad in first, 10, 15 years of my stay here. So in my mind, I had a debt to the society, and I wanted to pay it back somehow. So as soon as I got my green card after 10 years of being here on different visas, I volunteered as a firefighter, because that was my way of, that's a unpaid job that gives back to society and it was great. So I did that. I became a medic and I was in ambulance and it was a super cool job, and my idea at that time was to become a full-time firefighter. However, at that time in our area, the only way to get to be a firefighter was to be a paramedic, and that's a full-time school for 2 years. And I at that time I already had a career, had a kid, a wife that was going to school, so I couldn't just leave my career and go to school and have no income. So that kind of
becoming a firefighter can be hard.
And at first it was semi easy because everything was paid by fire department and they did everything around our volunteer schedule. So I did the fire academy on the weekends. I did EMT basic and EMT advanced on the weekends, and it took a little longer, but it was doable. However, with paramedic school, it was absolutely not, because it's Monday to Friday, 8 to 10 hours a day. It went out the window. And at the same time, a couple guys from my fire station became cops, and they're always telling the stories, war stories from work. And I also work with most of the department, because I used to work in a casino as a casino manager, so I would call them and they were super professional and I like what they were doing. So I was like, well, I can be a firefighter, why not a cop? It's a good job too, it's fun, it's still helping people, kind of same kind of a thing. So I applied, and as soon as I got my citizenship, I started applying applied with NHP, I applied with a couple different police departments, a couple different sheriff's offices. And well, here I am. It took me a year and a half because, of course, the background check is a little different when you're from Poland than when you're from here. Right. So it was a little more, you know.
A little harder.
Yeah, it was a little harder. I had to call, you know, I had to schedule calls to Poland with my mom and my brother who don't speak any English. So it was hard. But here I am. I'm a cop.
Okay, ask your mother if you've ever committed a crime. Mom, do I like cookies? Oh, yes, yes. She right. says no, I'm perfectly fine.
That's pretty much how it went.
So you had to translate for your own background investigator. No.
They actually, I scheduled the calls, but they called with their own, service to translate, obviously, right. because I would... Do right. what you just said.
Exactly.
But yeah, they called my mom, they called my brother, they called my schools, and it was a long process. But finally I got it, and I'm a cop. And it's, you know, it's been 6 years now, and it's I think it's so far it's the best job I ever had.
Yeah, so it far. Is a pretty good gig. You know, I mean I'm going through some PT and stuff like that for my shoulder and all, and you get to a point where you're like, man. This job beat me up, and like you look at Chuck now, you know, this job beats you up, bro. But what a ride.
Yeah. It's a great experience, you know, and especially for, you know, it's something that you don't hear very often that a kid from Poland comes to the United States and becomes a cop, you know?
Right.
I mean, I know it took me 15 freaking years to do it, but still, you know, it's not,
but you kind of had to get your citizenship. So
yeah, it's a little unusual, you know, to do that. So I'm very proud of myself. But I, you know, I have a, when it comes to stories, I'm lucky to be working in a very cop friendly, and it's Old West, you know, this is a little different. This is rural America, and both the citizens of our county and the people I work with are a little different than most usual Americans, I would say. I don't know.
Right.
You know, the big city America is a little different. You know, here people.
Oh, rural still, America is very different.
Yeah. Still, yeah. People still wave to us with five fingers, not one. You know, and stuff.
Right.
Like that. So it's really cool. You know, we come to work. I want to say at least a couple times a month that we'll go to briefing, and there is something from the citizens, whether it's you know, postcards with, you know, thank you for what you're doing, to, you know, little cookies, to bags of coffee, to whatever, to show their appreciation to what we do. And that really brings our morale up, and we know that we're doing the right things. However, we, you know, there's still the bad out there. Even in the best community, you still have the bad. And we have OISs, not very many, but we still have those.
Yeah.
It happens. And I think I want to talk about one of my experiences, and it comes to, it kind of brings in a little bit of PTSD, a little bit of guilt, I think. So since I'm on patrol, I've been on patrol for a little over 3 years. We had three OISs, and the first one was right when I was still in FTO. So that really didn't affect me because my head was still pan into
right.
You know, FTO, and those of you who went to FTO anywhere know how hard it is, and you don't have time to think about anything else.
Yeah, put your head down, put the blinders on.
Yeah, exactly. It's
and
just
pass,
you have to, right? Yeah, just go for, you know, grind, go forward, and don't let anything just, you know, distract you, disturb you, this, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that one didn't affect me. Second one was one of my close friends, one of my sergeants. Just a great dude. He got shot in the hand, and that didn't affect me very, like, I mean, affect me a little bit, but not super hard, because it was my day off. I'm not supposed to be there. However, when we got, you know, when it happened, it was, everybody texted each other right away. So from the time of the shooting to time I was at work was probably 35 minutes, because everybody showed up. All wow. of us, you know, we are a small agency, so there was no call from sergeants, hey, we need you to work. It was just...
No, you just go in.
It just, everybody just went in. There was no questions asked, and we just stayed there until they told us, okay, we're good, you can go home. And he survived, he's fine, he's back at work. got a couple of titanium screws in his hand, but he's doing well, and he's back, he was back in patrol, and he's great. The third OS happened on the day that I took off as my just mental health day, you know, one of those sick days that you take once in a while.
Comp a day off, man.
Yeah, so I was off. Turn off my phone, just I was off. I just went off the grid, you know, for that night. Stayed home, had a couple of beers, you know, just spend time with family and wife. Woke up in the morning, turned my phone off on, and there was probably 100 messages on my phone from guys at work, from my friends outside work that I used to work at casinos with. You know, started with, "Are you okay? Is it you?" You know, it's like, holy shit, something happened. And I'm thinking, yeah, somebody got shot.
So yeah, because if they're asking, is it you?
Is it you? Right. Is it okay? So I call one of my buddies. He's like, yeah, you know, another sergeant got shot in the face.
Holy shit.
And I'm like, oh, you know, fuck, that's bad, right?
Yeah, you can say it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it's really bad. And my first thought was, when did it happen? And it's my sergeant from my shift. Oh, it happened like, you know, 11 p.m. whatever in B2, which is the beat that I would usually take on that day. Because it would be my Friday, and on my Fridays at that time, I would always take B2. And it happened in B2. I'm like, fuck, first of all, in my head, I should be there. What would happen if I was there? How different would it play out? So that really screwed with my head. And it, you know, we get a little bit more information that he's in hospital, he's fine, he went through surgeries. He was extremely lucky. He got shot in the cheek. It shattered his jaw, knocked a couple teeth out. The bullet bounced off of his jaw and hit his spine. And it actually fractured his spine, but it didn't sever
the spinal cord.
When it hit him, he got instant paralysis of his arm. So he dropped his gun, and he was for a couple of minutes. His arms were just stuck. Right. It all came back again. He's back to work. He was back to work in within 2 months, I think. So super fast. He recovered super fast. I mean, it happened December 20th of last year, and he was back to work, I want to say, mid February.
Wow.
So, I mean, amazing. But anyways, again, my head is going, you know, happened, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then I came back to work a couple days later after my days off. And of course, everybody talking about it, what happened, you know, I get more details and stuff like that. And then this message comes out, hey, we need to be in a hospital for Johnny, because that's his name, doing security. Because, you know, it's hospital. You never know who's going to walk in and whatever. So I volunteered. I'm like, I'm going.
Right.
I want to see him. I want to see how he's doing. And all the way to Reno, because he was in Reno, it's an hour drive from my city. Again, my head was like, shit, I'm going to see him. He's all fucked up. You know, it's going to be horrible. But I have to do it just even for myself, or just to see him that he's alive. Yeah. And I walked into his room, and it was Johnny and his wife. And the first thing I saw was, you know, his jaw was wired shut because it was shattered, obviously.
Sure.
But the first thing I saw was a big smile on his face and thumbs up. And at that moment, I was like, that's it. My everything that I had in my head went away.
Yeah.
It was literally like that. I have that picture in my head till this day, you know, that just little assurance from the guy who was in serious pain and serious shit that he's okay. Gave me the ease of mind, relieved my stress, my you know, short-lived PTSD or whatever it was. But I think about this till this day, that sometimes you have to, you know, do things that you don't want to do just to heal yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that was healing for me, seeing him and going there and talking to him. He was writing on the board, sure, and I was talking, but it was, it was more for myself than it was for security, for Johnny. And it helped me so much just to clear my head. And again, you know, in our work, line of work, you have to be open for thought of that you might not be okay in your head, you know, that you might go in a fight, you might see, you know, people don't call 911 because they have the best day of their life. They call because they have the worst day of their life.
Right.
You know, they call 911 because something extraordinary just happened, and either it happened to them or they witnessed. And then you go there and you have to see it too, you know, one way or another. And that piles up on us. You know, I'm only 6 years in this profession, and there's people that have been there for 20, 25 years.
Right.
If you don't have that mindset that it's okay to talk about it, that it's okay to go seek counseling, you are going to be messed up at the end, you know? And that's my take out of this whole situation with Johnny. You have to do things for yourself outside doing it for your partners, outside doing it for community, outside doing it for everybody else. You have to remember about that you're there too, and you have to take care of yourself.
And what I mean, I can only use the word gift, but it's the best word that comes to mind, that this guy, Johnny, probably knew how bad you were feeling about this, because he knew you'd taken, he knew you were supposed to work that beat. He knew you were, you know, you'd taken the night off.
I'm sure.
He knew. And for him to be the guy shot in the face, knowing that, you know, you're walking through the door, when you walk through the door, for him to give you the thumbs up and the smile to just be like, dude, it's cool. It, you know, like,
yeah.
That's such a, you know, that's such a comrade in arms thing. It's like, he's the one suffering and he's not angry at you. He's just like, bro, it's cool. It's fine. It, you know, I'm good.
Yeah, shit happens, you know, it could happen to anybody else. And
it could happen to anybody.
Since we've talked hundreds of times, you know, Johnny came back because he was my graveyard sergeant, and that rotation just started literally a month earlier, you know. So we've been on the shift for a month, and he got shot, get off for 2 months, came back for another month, you know, to finish the rotation. And then since he's been on swing shift, but we've talked multiple times, you know, about the whole situation. We, of course, everybody, you know, Monday quarterback, the whole thing, there was videos was released, you know, everything, and everybody was super open about what happened and how it could been worse or could been better, and what was done good, what was done bad. But it's such a, in the end, it was such a good experience, I think, to the group of people that I work with.
Right.
You know, it brought us closer, you know, because he survived. That's the most important thing. Yes, he will have some probably life, I mean, health issues, because that will just stay with him.
Right.
You have shrapnel in your tongue, you have shrapnel in your jaw and stuff like that they couldn't.
Yeah, you don't get shot in the face and walk away without something.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. So you know, it sucks for Johnny, but overall, it couldn't end up any better than it did. You know, everything played in, you know, fell in the place where it should, and it was good. And it showed, many people realized after that day how good the psychological help is for you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because we have some tough guys in here, you know, some veterans and stuff like that. And those guys, you know, you hear about, you know, auditory exclusion, about tunnel vision and stuff like that. And when we spoke to those guys who were on scene and fire shots and stuff, they, all of them said, hey, I didn't know where my partners were because I had such a tunnel vision. Hey, I had no idea anybody else was shooting. I didn't hear myself shooting. I thought my gun jammed because I didn't hear any kind of noise, you know. But at the same time, they all said they were calm, that they knew they had a job to do, and they did. It was taken care of, you know. So that's a great experience, like I said.
If you go into our back catalog, we have an episode with a guy by the name of Randy Sutton, and he's you know, big law enforcement personality in the United States. He was on Cops many, many times when he was with Las Vegas Metro. And now he does, like, you know, Fox News and commentary, and works with the Wounded Blue Foundation. Longtime listeners will be familiar with this. He told us a story about an officer involved shooting he was in. And he talked about years later, 10 years later, a decade after the shooting, he was having dinner with his partner, who was his partner at the time that the shooting occurred, and now they were just friends, but they were working different assignments, and they were having dinner, and it was right around the anniversary of the shooting. And he says, we brought it up at dinner. We're like, wow, can you believe that was 10 years ago? And they're like, yeah. So they both went into the bathroom and washed their hands, do their thing. And while he was washing his hands, he looks over at his buddy, and they've never really talked about it. And he goes, man, I just always think back to that guy when he was shooting at me saying, die, motherfucker, die. And he says, his partner looked at him and goes, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, can you believe that guy yelled 'die, motherfucker, die' to me?" And his partner goes, "Bro, you said that."
What?
And he's like, "What?" And he goes, "Seriously?" He goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "For 10 years, I thought the suspect yelled at me, 'die, motherfucker, die.'" And his partner was the one that goes, "No, dude, that came out of your mouth, not his."
Yeah, that's amazing what your mind does to your, you know, to your, to yourself.
Yeah.
When it comes to such a stressful event, you know, because I mean, it's you don't get any more stressful than being in a shooting when somebody shoots at you. That is, you can't top that with anything.
Right. Right.
You know?
Right.
So your mind is just goes totally high wire, and I'm not surprised at all. It's a cool story, but I'm not. It doesn't like surprise me.
No, it, you know, if your brain can beat your heart without you thinking about it, it can blink your eyes without you thinking about it. Mm-hmm. It can form a sneeze, digest food, and operate your lungs without thinking about it. The amount of things your brain is capable of making your body do without you being a willing participant should not shock you then when people hear shit, see shit, smell shit, don't remember shit. I mean, your brain can do whatever it wants.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's such a crazy feeling, like when you're getting shot at and then everything shuts off and you start reacting and you don't hear anything. And the only thing that I felt was my rifle rocking back and forth in my shoulder. I didn't hear any of those rounds. And as soon as the volley of fire stopped, I look, I scan the area, and we ended up making approach. Long story short, I guess it was a few days later, one of the dudes who's standing right next to me goes, did that hurt your ears? And I was like, "Did what hurt my ears?" He's like, "You shooting." I was like, "Dude, I didn't hear any of those rounds. It wasn't that loud, was it?" And he goes, "That was the loudest thing I've ever heard in my fucking life." And he goes, "I was standing right next to you." He's like, "My ears were ringing for the whole day."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, well, I didn't hear any of it."
Yeah. In one of our other shootings, one of our sergeants, the guy who got shot in the hand in our second one I was talking about, he was in the first one I was talking about, and he used his shotgun, and he thought that the shotgun malfunctioned. And he actually fired all the rounds, reloaded, and fired all those rounds. And he's like, "What is going on with those rounds? They like, what, you know?" And then
they won't work.
Transitioned to his pistol and fired some more rounds. And again, he's like, "What? This is not going. What's going on?" And it turns out most of the rounds actually hit the suspect. But it's just your brain is a magical thing, you know, when you think about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
The computer inside your head can tell you whatever it wants to, whenever it wants to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I talk about in my shooting, in third episode of this podcast, I talk about, you know, how I remember my thoughts and my feelings taking, you know, 5 or 6, 7 minutes that I was able to think about things. And yet I know objectively that the whole thing lasted 10 seconds. Right. And yet I felt like I was debating things in my head. So it just goes to show you how fast your brain can actually function. Mm-hmm. And that's where the slowing down of time comes from. My partner swears he went out the driver's side. In fact, he crawled out the passenger side window that he had shot out towards the suspect and then jumped over the bed of the pickup truck and landed next to me. And he told the investigators, like, "I went out the driver's side right after him." And they're like, "You did what now?" Because the SWAT guys, me, everybody was like, "No, he went out the window and then jumped over the pickup truck bed." And so he goes, "No, I didn't."
Yeah.
Crazy. Wild. Yeah, that's your mind is an amazing thing.
For yeah, sure. Scary. Amazing.
Yep.
So, well, you got, have you got a one more quick one for us that you can throw us rural policing in Nevada is like something that it's like only like you can't make this shit up.
I do actually. So I'm in Douglas County, which covers Carson Valley and covers part of Sierra Nevadas, all the way up to Lake Tahoe. So it goes all the way to 8,000-9,000 feet in elevation.
So it's like Truckee and other side of Donner Pass. Yeah,
other side of the lake. Yeah, south side of the lake. Southeast side of the lake of Lake Tahoe.
Okay,
that's our jurisdiction. Okay, so, I as a rookie, I spent a lot of time up there because that's a beat that nobody wants to take, and you know, you have to break the leg, deal with the casinos, and deal with everything else, you know, vacation rentals and people from California in general and stuff like that. So obviously I go there a lot, and every fall there is a lot of burglary calls that we have. You know, people go to casino and then come back and somebody burglarized my cabin, my rental. Okay, so we go there and we know exactly what it is. So we go there, we go and, you know, hey, this door was knocked down, you know, or this window was ripped open.
Right.
Okay, so what is missing? Oh, well, not much is actually missing. Our laptops are still here. Our phones are still here. Our bags are still here. They only went to kitchen, opened the cabinets, opened the refrigerator, ate our food, and took a huge shit in the middle of a floor. So I don't know what kind of burglars are those. Well, those are the big brown burglars, you know?
They're Yogi burglars.
Yeah, and we have those calls. Last night we had three.
That's amazing.
Calls, you know, so
three bear burglar calls.
It wasn't burglar, but it was bear. You know, in the garage, burglary is at least once a week that we have one of those. You know, and it's funny because those people are like, oh my god, there was a bear in our house. When we tell them, when they realize, like, oh yeah, we have to leave. It's like, no, it's a bear.
It's
like, you know, when you're in California and you have a cat in your trash can, it's the same thing. Yeah. Our cats are a little bigger, you know, and they're brown, and you know, you can scare them away when you yell, and they'll just go to the next house over. It's not a big deal. So that's, you know, that's a police thing in rural Nevada is like. And on the other hand, you know, just this past month I had to take two bears off of the road when they were killed by the car. So it's kind of a sad story because people don't pay attention. Oh, it's, you know, it's a wide open road in the middle of nowhere. I'm going to go 70, 90, 100 miles an hour. Well, those bears don't stand a chance with them. So it's
well, and that bear, an animal that big, that'll kill you if it comes through the windshield.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. The thing is, you know, the bigger birds are usually smart enough not to jump onto the car.
Right. It's always
usually
the
ones that I get killed are the you know, teenagers,
babies,
you know,
teenagers, immature,
the year, 2 years old that are smaller and they have no chance. But that's in this time of the year, and then in spring when they wake up, it's daily routine. You know, when we go and we have to chase them from people's backyards, and it's fun. It's a little different, you know, a little different crime.
I remember when I got onto my department, and I think I've told this story before on the show, but I got onto my department and it was a somewhat rural agency. It was, you know, a city of about 30,000, but it had the biggest square mileage of any city in the county because it was so rural in the outskirts of the city. So there's a lot of people that owned horses and horse property and all this other stuff. So I was in FTO. I was probably 2 weeks into my training and I get dispatched to a loose horse in the roadway. What now? And they're like, loose horse in the roadway. I'm like, okay. And so I'm in the FTO's looking at me like, what are you going to do, boot? And so I've got the mic and I looked at him and I'm all, okay, so I'm going to tell them dispatch animal control. And he's like, oh no. I'm like, what do I do? And he goes, you're going to say responding code 3 from the corner of, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm all, what? And he goes, dude, you don't understand. If a car hits that horse, we are taking an injury traffic collision report. We are not taking.
Absolutely.
So we need to get our asses to this damn horse and get it out of the road. And I had never, it just had never occurred to me of how dangerous large animals. Absolutely. And he starts as we're rolling code 3 and he's like, okay, you drive, I'll talk. And he's like, so here's the thing. The horse's height, the hood takes out the legs, the entire torso goes into the passenger compartment, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh shit. And I start to drive faster.
So I kid you not, like probably a month ago or so. Yeah. At the beginning of September. So we have a lot of cow pastures here in Douglas County. It's, you know, a lot of farms and really huge amounts of cows. So beginning of September, they were weaning off the little babies off of their mothers. So they were moving them to different, you know, pastures to start their own life. And for 3 days straight on Graveyard. It just so happened. I mean, day after day after day, we had a traffic accident with a cow on a major highway. It was just you know, one was just a little cow, and then
it was an utter disaster.
Second was two cows and one car, and the car was absolutely destroyed. Nobody got hurt, you know, beside the cows, thanks God. But it's no joke, you know. I mean, you go, people might laugh, you know, people from big cities might laugh. Yeah, you know, you're responding to cows, what, you're a cowboy or but it's a serious
yeah.
situation. It's as serious as hitting anything else on the road, you know, or even
that's
more,
like somebody calling in like K-Rail. Oh, there's a concrete barrier that's standing in the middle of the roadway. That's the same thing.
Exactly.
It's just a little bit mushier.
With our department, we have a couple of guys that grew up here, you know, and they have cows themselves. So it's always, you know, 3 a.m. call to this guy. Hey, so that cow has, you know, HX on its side, you know, as a brand.
Right.
Whose is it?
Who's that?
Yeah, he's right. Like, oh yeah, call whatever. Matt, that's his cow. Okay, thanks. Everybody knows each other, you know, in small rural community. Yeah, but it's
for
it's
sure. Cool.
So do you guys carry lassos out there?
So no exaggeration. Our current sheriff, who is just, I can't say enough good words about him. Fantastic dude, great leader. I mean, just great guy. But he has his own cows. He does, you know, rodeo. He does roping and all that stuff. You know, riding on a horse with a cowboy hat. Just, you know, typical, like I said, rural Nevada. And we were talking about, you know, next order of business will be sheriff telling everybody that we need to get a class on, you know, roping,
lasso,
and class on,
roping.
On lassos, and that's gonna be our, you know, another weapon.
okay, no joke though, I'm out of training and I get it dispatched to another loose horse in the roadway. It wasn't my first one anymore, it was probably my 30th one, but I still never got used to them because the horses are so big and intimidating, right? Like, horses are fucking scary. Like, if you've never been up close to a pissed off horse, like, they're totally calm and cool. That's all, you know, oh, horse in the corral and he's calm. No, like, get near a sweaty, angry horse and see how comfortable you are, right? So yep. I get up there and this horse is loose and he's mad. This lady who knew way more about horses was brave enough to stand in front of it and put her arms up and get it to stop, and brought over, you know, some tack from her property and got it corralled. But that's when it occurred to me. I'm like, man, all I got is a catch pole. I should start carrying a rope of some kind in the trunk of my car. If only, I'm not going to, and everybody's like, are you going to rope it? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to rope it. But like, I watched this lady, the way she was able to calm it down and walk up to it and get the rope around its neck, that I'm willing to do. I'm not going to try and rope the damn thing and have it drag me down the street. So yeah, I said we should have, you know, even if it's just a soft, you know, soft cotton rope or something that you could tie around a horse's neck. We went to these damn calls enough. And so you're right. I mean, if you've got cows, for example, in Northern California, Chuck, I don't know if you remember this, Central California, the highway patrol officer that murdered 7 cows.
What?
And it was because, did you hear about this?
No.
I don't know if your dad. So this is when I was a brand new cop and it was up by my neck of the woods, and the highway patrolman goes out and some guy's cows had gotten loose and were walking in the middle of the roadway, and he couldn't get the cows to leave the roadway. So he just walked up and bam, 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 executed every single one of them.
Oh my God.
And he shot 7 cows and then had, you know, the department of transportation come out and scoop the bodies up. And then when it was a big controversy. And what ended up happening is the owner of the cows ended up having the highway patrol had to write him a check for the fair market value of each one of those cows, because they were able to articulate that this guy had no cause to just execute 7 prize pieces of cattle. I'm like, damn, dude, y'all are serious about keeping the highways open in California, man. They just shoot cows and shit.
My dad probably would have made fun of the guy, because my dad grew up in that neck of the woods and grew up roping and ranching.
And so he probably knew how to handle it. But if you're a city boy like me, you know, I, dude, I was a city. Oh, I'm sorry. By the way, I looked it up. It was 2002 and it was, let's see, 6 heifer cows. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
6. And the CHP, you know, oh, next, here you go. That was June of 2002, July of 2002. CHP admits wrongdoing in cow shootings.
So it's a, you know, it's an old joke.
Yeah.
When we got 2 cows that one accident that messed up this one car really bad, and they were on the roadway, still alive, but you know, I mean, they were so messed up. But obviously, you don't want to see the animal suffering for too long. But I'm not a vet and I'm not a cow guy, so there was 4 of us, you know, patrol deputies. So we called the rancher, and you know, we kind of get his idea how to dispose of these cows, and he's like, yeah, those are. Nothing we can do about them. They're going to be dead anyway. So right. Go ahead and shoot them. So my partner gets a shotgun, goes to the first cow, shoots it in the head. And it's a scene from Me, Myself, and Irene, you know, when you shoot the cow, the cow goes, murr! It's like, oh shit, here we go. We have a rancher watching us. Those 2 people from the car that hit those cows. And we are here doing a freaking clown rodeo on the cow. So finally, my other partner's like, yeah, let's just do an AR and one shot in the head and it'll be done. So we did. Oh, but that first shot from shotgun was like, oh, yeah, that was not the best decision we made.
Yeah, you'd have to need a slug to do that.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if you guys have heard of the comedian. His name is Mike Armstrong. I think it's Mike Armstrong. He's a comedian. But why I bring him up is because before he became a stand-up comic, he was a police officer. And some of his stories in his stand-up comedy routines are just taken straight from his time as a cop. And one of them that I will never forget is he said that an old lady called because she had a feral cat in her basement that was like violent. And she's like, I need this cat out of my basement. So these 2 cops go over there and this cat is like mean and violent. And they get the catch pole and they grab the cat and they yank the catch pole tight, but they yanked the catch pole so tight that the cat's neck snapped. And so he's got a dead cat at the end of the catch pole. And he says, so the lady, she starts saying, so he's got this dead cat at the end of this catch pole because he snapped its neck. And this old lady's looking at him going, wow, the cat was so much more violent before. It was just meowing and clawing. I wonder what happened. And his partner looks at him and goes, I don't know, why isn't it doing that? And so he starts shaking the catch pole and making cat noises so the old lady wouldn't know he accidentally killed the cat with the catch pole.
It snapped its neck. It's funny.
Snapped its neck.
You know, so, man.
Those kinds of things, they happen.
Sorry.
Oh, yes, that's okay. Those kinds of things happen all the time. They're just really funny. And what me being a city boy, you know, I didn't know what 4-H was, and I didn't know what Future Farmers of America was. I remember going to the county fair for the first time and thinking it was mean to make all these 12-year-olds hang out with cows while the parents were off at the fair. And my stepmother was like, no, that's their cow. I'm like, what 12-year-old has a cow?
I got one more city boy, ruler boy story for you guys.
Okay, go.
So I'm on FTO, and we just got our first batch of body worn cameras, so we're still not used to it, and it's you know, it's a new thing, whatever. And you know, of course, there's things being said before the cameras are activated or after they're activated too late and stuff like that. So anyways, we get a call, Lake Tahoe again. I'm on FTO, and my partner at the time was one of my best buddies that I know back from fire department. So we go to a bear call, of course. Again, city people from somewhere, whatever, you know, one of the big cities in the United States, they call for a bear in their backyard, in their rental. We get there and, you know, we peek over the fence and sure as shit, there is a bear right there eating in the trash can, you know, like 10 feet away from us. So we make some noise, huge bear. He looks at us, we make some more noise, you know, turn our lights and sirens and stuff. So he finally kind of walks the corner of the lot, climbs over the fence, jumps over the fence, but the jump was too short and he gets hanged up on his balls. and as he's hanging from the fence by his balls, you know, he's like, okay, cameras are off. You know, I turned my camera off, my partner turned my camera off, and my FTO didn't. And he goes, dude, did you see the size of these balls? And the city people are looking at us like, are you guys fucking crazy? There's a huge bear on the, like, hanging off of the fence by his balls. And you just, like, taking pictures of him and staring at him? What?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's stuck by it. When are you ever going to see a bear hanging by a fence or hanging by his nuts over a fence again? You got to document. I mean, come on.
So he finally freaked himself.
Guys, this is a life moment.
Yeah, but those people were like, they couldn't believe that we were, like, so casual with a huge bear, you know, 15, 20 feet away from us, just like it was another dog cat or whatever, you know. It's like, yeah, it is for us. It's literally another stray cat or stray dog. We don't care. He's not away.
Well, Stubble, I love that you were able to come on and talk rural cop stories with me, because my city cop time, like, we had a city, but we also had some very rural stuff that I know a lot of city cops, like Chuck and I, have swapped stories, and I'll say shit that I've done, and he's like, really? You know, so...
Sorry, I want more story then.
Okay, good.
That's a SWAT story here. So, of course, you know, rural America, so Breaking Bad comes in mind, right? And stuff like that, you know, big desert and stuff. So we had a one raid probably a year and a half ago. Yeah, about a year and a half ago. We go to raid his house, you know, dopers, whatever. I was assigned to rake a window and take care of one of the bedrooms. So we did that, you know, the interior team gets the people in custody. Everything is good. And then we look up, and in the bedroom that we just, you know, arrested two dopers out of, there is a big, you know, 60 screen inch TV. And on that 60 inch TV is Netflix or whatever it was that says, do you want to continue watching Breaking Bad? So that was kind of, you know, like a ironic story that our Breaking Bad dopers were watching Breaking Bad.
They were probably looking for tips,
probably, right? How to cook it better.
Yeah, how to run an empire of meth. Like, man, if we just watch Breaking Bad, we could go big time. We can take this shit next level.
Not in Douglas County.
Yeah, you'd be better off watching The Wire. Well, Stubble, I appreciate you coming on, man. And normally we dedicate an episode to a brother or sister officer that's been lost in the line of duty or overseas or military veteran. And I understand that you didn't have anybody, but Chuck, we do have a listener that asked who if we would dedicate an episode to. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. Let me go to the message real quick.
And this is something for our listeners. We, you know, if you have somebody, we've done this a couple of times now. If you have somebody that you want us to dedicate an episode to or give a tribute to, most recently had a grandfather that passed away who was in the military, and we told a little bit about his story. You know, that's who we're here.
Story. I listened to that. That was super cool.
Yeah. Isn't that great? I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
That was great.
So the guy writes in and basically asks if we can, dedicate an episode to a fallen officer that I guess lives in his city. And I said, sure, you know, go ahead, send it on over, send me his name. And so he sent it on over, and it's for Sergeant Nick Reisner. Sergeant Nick Reisner succumbed to gunshot wounds sustained the previous day when he was critically wounded during a shootout with an auto theft suspect in Muscle Shoals. The suspect had shot the passenger of a vehicle he was riding in and pushed them out of the vehicle in the 800 block of Avalon Avenue in Muscle Shoals. The man that then stole another vehicle drove into the city of Sheffield. The vehicle was spotted by members of the Sheffield Police Department and pursued back into Muscle Shoals. Sergeant Reisner used his patrol car to block the suspect vehicle after it drove into a Walmart parking lot. Nothing good ever happens at Walmart parking lots.
Yeah.
Nope.
The man opened fire on officers, wounding Sergeant Reisner and another officer from the Sheffield Police Department. The subject was also wounded in the exchange of gunfire and taken into custody. Sergeant Reisner was airlifted to Huntsville Hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds the next day. The second officer was saved by his bullet-resistant vest. Sergeant Reisner was a United States Army Reserve veteran and had served with the Sheffield Police Department for 8 years. His tour was 8 years, and primary cause was gunfire, and the incident date was
Friday, October 1st, 2021.
Yeah, just recently happened. So the suspect, I guess, is facing 10 counts, including murder. Yeah, this was pretty recent, and it was out of Alabama, right? I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Sergeant Reisner, we've rest easy, brother. We've got it from here. Chuck, do you have anything as we close out this episode?
Yeah.
Besides a case of the infected knee surgery.
Oh boy, that sucks. Tell you what. Yeah, if you want to be on the show, email us at booking.warstories@gmail.com. You can also click the link in the bio, both on Facebook and Instagram. Also on there is links to the podcast for Spotify as well as Apple, links to our website, links to TeePublic store, links to the YouTube, and both Tom and I's emails are both on there.
Yeah.
So click that link if you want to get in contact with us, watch some content, listen to some podcasts, or you are interested in coming onto the show, want to share a story, or want us to dedicate an episode to someone.
And we're going to be possibly coming up with a new advertiser that would be giving us, if this goes the way it's supposed to, we weren't going to say anything about who or what, but if it happens, one of the ways you guys can support us is by showing your love, taking that promo code they're going to give us and going over there and buying some stuff from them. And I guarantee if it works out, you'll want to get some stuff. That should be pretty cool. And Stebble, I really appreciate you coming on. Like I said, having somebody that can swap, you know, large animal stories and understands the pains of dealing with livestock.
Yeah, a little different. Absolutely.
I mean, you can't put a twist lock on a cow hoof. It just, it's never going to work.
Right.
I got one more thing.
Go.
Real quick, guys. For all this listeners out there, this is going to air Monday. So
It's airing right now on Monday.
the week that it airs right now.
Right.
Be looking forward to middle of this week.
Wednesday.
To get some cool clothes. Stuff will be up on the website. There will be an ad on Facebook and Instagram. So as you're listening to this, be ready to
Wednesday, check it out.
New shirts.
Yep. We'll do some giveaways. We got some cool stuff coming up. So again, Stebble, I appreciate you coming on. Come back anytime. And we'll get some crazier stories. Maybe we'll swap some like doper stories, because I loved working narcs and I love getting the doper stories.
Oh, those but, are fun too. Absolutely.
Yeah, oh, for sure. They dopers do the most fucked up things. And until our next
episode. I have to kind of put myself on the spotlight. I have a record in my department for most weed ever intercepted in a vehicle. So,
we can
talk about that.
There's a teaser for the next time you're on. Talk about your department record. It's always nice to get a record, you know, to set a record.
It is, you know, and records and policies called after your name, you know. I have a couple of those too.
My drill instructor in the academy said, if I ever find any one of you guys' names on case law that takes away shit that I like to do to bad guys, I'm gonna come fuck you up.
I have a policy in the academy named after my last name too, so I'm kind of one of those guys, you know.
Wow.
Well, that's a story for another podcast.
Well, until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.